Welcome to Island Conversations with Sherry Bracken, where we talk about issues facing our Big Island community. Island Conversations, Sunday mornings on KWXX at 6:30 and on B97B93 at 7 a.m. Or listen anytime at kwxx.com. Island Conversations, brought to you by KTA Superstores, where you're someone special every day since 1916. Now, here's your host and producer, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Welcome to Island Conversations. On Sundays, we're on the radio on the Big Island of Hawaii on KWXX and B97B93, rebroadcast the following Friday on KPUA 670 AM in Hilo. And a generally slightly longer version of Island Conversations is available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Today, we're talking about a really serious health topic, and that's measles, and let me explain why. Not long ago, we heard about a major measles outbreak in Samoa, and that made me curious to learn about measles here in the state and vaccinations. Samoa has now lifted their state of emergency, but they still had 30 new cases just last week. Measles is a highly infectious disease, and in Samoa, as of last week, it's killed 83 people, most of them babies and young children, and it's sickened more than 5,700 others. And this is in a place that has a population of just over 200,000, very similar to the Big Island's population. In addition, just recently we've now learned that there's an outbreak of measles in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and 6,000 people have died there. So to talk with us about measles, we have three guests. From the Department of Health by telephone, the head of the department, Dr. Bruce Anderson. Good morning, aloha, Dr. Anderson.
Good morning, Jared.
And with him on the phone is Dr. Sarah Park, the state's chief epidemiologist. Good morning, aloha, Dr. Park.
Good morning.
And to make sure that we have the Big Island perspective, we are also joined by a Big Island pediatrician who has treated infants and children here on the island since around 1981 after working as a pediatrician in the San Francisco area, Dr. Peter Locatelli. Good morning, aloha, Dr. Locatelli.
Aloha, Sherry.
I'd like to start with a really simple question. What is measles? Dr. Park?
Well, I think you gave a really nice description of what's been going on in some parts of the world that really demonstrates the serious nature of this disease. I think a lot of people recognize it as a rash illness, but really it's a very serious respiratory illness that often is accompanied by a high fever and then happens to have a rash. The rash is what everyone recognizes, but what really makes it serious is the respiratory nature of this disease. In addition to the fact that the virus can also invade the brain, there's a number of complications that can occur with measles, and it's not just a quote-unquote simple rash illness. On top of that, it's probably the most contagious disease that we know out there right now, and it really is something that we have to reckon with, and we really want to make sure we maintain high vaccination rates and high immunity, because if you have any susceptible individuals around someone who is currently infectious, most likely the vast majority of them, if not all of them, are going to succumb to the disease. That's how infectious it is. And to give a comparison, if you have someone with the flu around susceptible individuals, probably they're going to successfully transmit the flu to at least one other individual, but not to all the individuals around them.
You know, Dr. Locatelli, I had measles as a child, and most of the people I knew at that time did. At that time, I never heard about people dying, and I don't know if that's because measles was a less contagious, less severe disease back then, or if we just had different kinds of communication. Tell us what you know.
I'm in the same boat as you in terms of, you know, being born in 1950. I'm certain I had measles as a child. I'm certain people did die of measles. They did get disabled from it. But from our generation, that was just something you expected because there was no way of preventing it.
Dr. Park, how many cases of measles have we had in the state of Hawaii?
In 2019, we had 4 cases. None of them were locally acquired. They were all acquired abroad. And that's, you know, knock on wood, that we'd like to see that continue, and that if we do have cases in the state of Hawaii, we'd like to see that they're imported and there's not actual disease transmission here. And so we hope that we don't see increasing numbers of importations. We hope we don't see locally acquired cases. That all depends on maintaining a high immunization rate in our state.
Dr. Locatelli.
Dr. Park, in the anti-vaccine community, there's lots of misinformation. One is that herd immunity doesn't matter. In other words, if you have a very high level of immunized people, say 99%, 98%, it's very unlikely for the virus to transmit. Is that correct?
That is actually correct. If we were truly at a 98 to 99% vaccination rate, we probably would have very limited transmission should a person with measles be introduced here. The unfortunate thing is you and I both know there are unfortunately pockets in our communities throughout the state where it's probably closer in some areas maybe 50%, some areas 70%. It's a patchwork, and that's a concern.
And in those groups that have very low immunization rates, wouldn't they be the center of transmission to others?
Yes, they would. And that is our concern, our shared concern.
The other misconception is, oh, if they have a rash, we'll keep the child home, therefore it won't transmit. Could you discuss that?
Unfortunately, measles is infectious before the rash starts. Measles starts to be infectious from the moment that someone starts to feel sick, usually about 4 days before the rash starts. People tend to recognize measles by the rash, but you and I both know there's much more to the disease than the rash. It's the coughing, the fever, and such. And so someone can be very infectious before that. While we definitely want to keep folks who are sick isolated and keep them at home as soon as possible, but away from others, that's not enough.
Measles is bad enough, but I saw a very scary report in Science Magazine, which is a very respected scientific journal, about measles and its long-term impact on the immune system. What is known about the long-term impact of measles on the immune system, the part that is called immune amnesia? Dr. Park?
Measles is one of the first diseases where the phenomena of where your immune system isn't working as well in relation to other diseases, responding to other diseases after being hit by the primary disease. That's been recognized or anecdotally for quite a long time, and we've recognized it subsequently in other diseases where basically your immune system is so busy fighting off the one disease, in this case measles, that it seems not to respond well when it's attacked by other things. And certainly that's when we see things like a secondary bacterial pneumonia or gastroenteritis or various other things. Many of the deaths were oftentimes also related to complications such as this. It's very complex. Even now, there's still a lot of work being done to try to really understand what's happening. But what's being demonstrated in the research is that for as long as months after you get the measles, your immune system has been knocked down and it's lost the memory of how to respond to other diseases that you've already been introduced to. So in essence, you have to relearn how to respond to and fight those other diseases. Eventually, according to the research that's being done, it appears it comes back, but you wouldn't want to have to relearn how to respond, how to fight off other infections after you were lucky enough to fight them off the first time and maybe not so lucky the second time. Measles, as we're learning more and more, has a number of effects on the immune system beyond just recognizing the quote-unquote simple rash illness.
One of the things that I read was that one of the clues that first turned researchers on to look more carefully at this is that they found that after measles vaccine became a thing, after it was developed, that children were dying less often from other diseases after they had been vaccinated from measles. So, yeah, it sounds like measles has a way larger impact than just getting what sounds to many like a simple childhood disease. Dr. Park, you mentioned there were four cases in the state. How many of those were on the Big Island of Hawaii?
There were two, both non-residents, and they had acquired their disease on the mainland. We kept them isolated and restricted them from travel until they were no longer infectious to others.
Dr. Locatelli, you wanted to weigh in.
Dr. Park, do you have the data for 2018 in terms of the number of measles cases in the state of Hawaii?
I believe it was zero that year. The numbers really depend upon how many cases are imported. I believe it was 2014, we actually had some local transmission where unfortunately it got out. It was imported by one person and then the transmission occurred. Occasionally we'll see sort of an outbreak, if you will, but most of the time we see these up and down numbers related to imported cases.
You know, we talked a little about the Samoa outbreak, and we haven't talked about how that happened, but essentially what happened in that situation is there was a tragic situation where a couple of children died after they were unintentionally injected with a vaccine and an anesthetic that...
paralyzing anesthetic.
Yeah, and rumors got around that it was a vaccine that caused the problem. That wasn't the case, but it scared the heck out of everyone there. And over the the last few years, the vaccination rates have dropped to a point where they're much, much lower than in most other places, including Hawaii. We're able to maintain a vaccination rate of about 95% or something in that ballpark. Even a few percent makes a huge difference. And in Samoa, I think the vaccination rates were down around 30s, right? So you had a huge population there that was susceptible to measles, far more than you have here. But nevertheless, it's recommended that we maintain vaccination rates of at least 95% to prevent local transmission of the disease.
We require school kids to be vaccinated against measles. Is that correct?
Correct.
All states require children to be vaccinated.
Yeah, we're not alone in this.
And do adults need to be vaccinated against measles? Or if somebody had measles when they were a child, do they need to get a booster shot?
If you've had measles, you should have natural immunity. That's number one. Number two is most adults hopefully would have had at least one MMR if you've been born after 1957. If you're born before 1957, as Dr. Locatelli mentioned, you would have had the disease and therefore acquired natural immunity. So adults born after 1957 should have had at least one MMR. Now, if you fall into this group of higher risk, if you will, if you are an international traveler, if you're a healthcare worker, or if you are attending university college, then you fall into the categories where two doses of MMR are then required. Considering that all children are required across the nation, at some point we can envision that all adults will have received two MMR doses. But right now we're still in that sort of in-between phase where some folks might have actually only had one MMR, but that should be sufficient for now. If there were an ongoing outbreak, the extent of what Samoa is seeing, we might be considering advising people to get that second dose, but we're not in that situation right now.
Dr. Locatelli, you had a point.
From the standpoint of our audience, when we're talking about the measles vaccine, we're actually talking about a vaccine that's for measles, mumps, and rubella, which is also called German measles. And they're always combined together. There was an outbreak of mumps, correct, in Hawaii?
Yes.
And how many cases were there under that outbreak?
I believe if we confirmed 1,009 cases, and I'm stressing that because we suspect there were many, many more cases. As is always the case with many outbreaks, we only are able to count the cases that come to our attention, and unfortunately, as there are folks who never actually get laboratory confirmation for one reason or another, may not even present to their clinicians, so we can't count those. So we suspect there were many more cases. It was a pretty severe outbreak, and as Dr. Locatelli knows, I had advised at the time we were in the outbreak that everyone should consider getting an outbreak MMR dose. So some individuals would have gotten a third MMR if they'd already had two, and that was to try and combat the mumps.
And just a short interruption to remind you, this is Island Conversations. I'm Sherry Bracken. Today we're talking measles and vaccinations with Dr. Bruce Anderson and Dr. Sarah Park from State Department of Health and Dr. Peter Locatelli, who's a pediatrician on the Big Island of Hawaii in Kona. Next week, it's more about health with Dr. Todd Sito of Queens Medical Center talking about a 5-year study that showed hula is helpful for heart health. And we'll be talking about blood pressure. Before we return to Island Conversations, a word from KTA Superstores.
At KTA, local and fresh means you get the very best Hawaii Island has to offer. The grass-fed meats you find at KTA are raised without added hormones or antibiotics. Our seafood department is stocked with sustainable choices caught in local waters by local fishermen. KTA carries the largest selection of Hawaii Island homegrown produce. Our Mountain Apple brand is all local, so you know it's fresh and delicious. Local and fresh always tastes best at KTA.
Let's talk about vaccinations and exemptions, because one thing I've noticed is that our state does allow exemptions for certain reasons, and it appears that on the Big Island of Hawaii, we actually have more, well, actually, all three of the neighbor islands, Maui, Big Island of Hawaii, and Kauai, have more exemptions than does the island of Oahu. What qualifies as allowing a parent to exempt their child from being vaccinated against measles, for example?
This is Bruce. There are two types of exemptions from vaccines that are allowed in Hawaii. One is a medical exemption, when there are good medical reasons not to give someone a vaccine, and a physician needs to attest to that. And then there's another class called religious exemptions, We don't have in this state philosophical exemptions, which are allowed in some states. That's not recognized in our state. But those are the only two types of exemptions that are allowed here in Hawaii.
Do we know how many people throughout the state have claimed exemptions for religious reasons? Because clearly medical exemptions should be based on true medical science. But how many people have claimed religious exemptions?
I don't have the exact number, but if you look at our website on immunization exemptions, there is a map. We can't be privy to the individual names and addresses, but the schools are supposed to be reporting to us what percent of their individuals have claimed exemptions. It runs a range from less than 1% in some schools to as high as 10% in some schools, even more.
On this island, we have one school, Malama Lama Waldorf School, that has a 46% exemption rate. We also have fairly high exemption rates with other charter schools, Kona Pacific Charter School, West Hawaii Explorations Academy, Innovations, and those are about 16%. And as I understand it, if I get an exemption for religious reasons, that means my child is not vaccinated against anything. Is that true? Like not against hepatitis or polio or pneumonia, any of those diseases?
Yeah, you can't request an exemption against one single vaccine or one single disease. It's an all-inclusive, all or none kind of thing. That's how our exemption system works. What our immunization staff have observed is that kids may still be getting vaccinated against a couple of other diseases, and so parents may have requested exemption, but then they're choosing to still have their child vaccinated against certain other diseases. But there are certainly kids out there that aren't being vaccinated against anything at all. So to understand how many of our kids are in that latter condition versus the more selective, that's not something we're able to determine right now.
Dr. Locatelli, you wanted to add something?
That creates chaos with trying to determine the percentage of people immunized for any given disease in the state, does it not?
It certainly does. What we have observed is that MMR does seem to be the most popular vaccine that we see is not being taken.
In reading the law, HAR 157, that covers immunizations in school, religious exemption states it's a personal religious belief exemption. You do not have to state what religion that is at all. And I believe it's done once, and then that religious exemption exists for the entirety of the time the child is in school. Is that correct?
That's correct. Let me just expand a little bit on this religious exemption issue. Many religions have established clear support for vaccination because the risks of not vaccinating outweigh their religious concerns using them. Others aren't so clear, which can result in confusion among their members. With the sheer number of religious and different denominations, it's understandable that beliefs, interpretations, and attitudes of the religious leaders and their followers will vary. When anti-vaccine beliefs and religion converge, that's when we see disease outbreaks occur, such as the measles outbreak that occurred in New York and New Jersey, primarily among Orthodox Jewish individuals. Here in Hawaii, we've got a plethora of religions, and as it is, it's a personal decision as to whether someone wants to declare that their religion would prohibit them to be vaccinated. We don't have the philosophical exemption option. I am concerned that more and more people are going to be claiming religious exemptions.
Dr. Anderson, in getting ready for this interview, I started reading as much as I could, and basically what I found is that most religions do not prohibit vaccinations. Judaism, Catholicism, Protestant denominations, most of them, Hindu, Sikh, Buddhism, Seventh-day Adventist, even Christian Scientists. I found quotes from Mary Baker Eddy saying that if they were required, they should be given. Now, Reformed Dutch does prohibit. But what happened in New York, as I understand it, after the horrible measles outbreak, the rabbis banded together and said, you know, there is no problem with having a vaccination. And the state of New York actually banned all exemptions, including religious exemptions, except for medical exemptions signed by an actual medical doctor. And the New York State Supreme Court upheld that law. Is the state of Hawaii considering doing something similar to make sure that we are getting the herd immunity that we need to actually protect people? Because I feel like we've just been lucky up till now, to be honest.
Well, I think we've been fortunate that our population here is basically well-educated and understands the value of vaccines. And we do support vaccinating everyone who doesn't have a medical reason not to be vaccinated. By the way, the medical exemptions apply to those who have had severe allergic reactions to previous doses of MMR or other vaccines, pregnant women, and those who have weakened immune systems or a family member with immune system problems. So they're very specific, and again, a physician would need to verify that that's the case. But this religious exemption is certainly something that can be abused. We would support all individuals be vaccinated regardless of their religious beliefs. It's a proven method of preventing disease. Most religions, representatives of those religions who are knowledgeable, will recognize the importance of vaccination and would support that personally and professionally. The law right now does allow for the religious exemption, so we would need to get lawmakers to change the law to disallow the religious exemption category. But it's something I believe personally should be considered just because it is a hole in the process. One thing I keep hearing from parents who are the anti-vaxxers and others is that, oh, we don't worry about our child. Well, it's not just about the child who's vaccinated. That child may be infected, and of course we're concerned about that, but it's almost more important that the child not transmit the disease to many other children. So you're being essentially selfish in not having your child vaccinated because they could be very dangerous in the community in transmitting disease to others who may not be vaccinated for whatever reasons, including those with medical exemptions who can't be vaccinated. So we'll see what the legislature does with this. Obviously, it's a very controversial issue, and people feel very strongly about it on one side or the other. But generally, we would support vaccinations for everyone.
We're talking about students, but are teachers, bus drivers, cafeteria workers, and custodians, people like that who come in contact with many more children, are they required to be vaccinated?
The short answer is no, they're not. Our focus, as is in the case of most states, is on vaccinating school-age children with the hope that we'll vaccinate most of them. And, of course, their vaccine is effective many, many years after that, probably through their lifetime in most cases. So that's a reasonable target population. There have been proposals to vaccinate staff at schools and others because they are in contact with the students, and certainly we would support that.
Well, wouldn't necessarily also be vaccinating them so much as requiring that they show proof of immunity or vaccination, because remember, as I mentioned earlier, the hope is that as time goes by, we will see that most adults, because they've grown up in the school system in the United States, they would have been subject to the requirements on school entry, and therefore the given is that as an adult, you should have at least one MMR already, if not at some point in the future, two MMRs.
Well, it sounds, Dr. Anderson, from what you said, that the Department of Health doesn't have the authority to make such a ruling without the legislature. Is this something that's even being discussed with the legislature about requiring adults who work in the schools to be vaccinated?
Our focus recently, at least, has been on assuring that the children are vaccinated. The governor did sign a rule recently which dramatically expanded our vaccine coverage to assure that the school-age child is vaccinated and would not transmit the disease. We probably have the most comprehensive vaccine coverage in the country right now. I'm very proud that we're taking some leadership in this area, and again, that it's being supported in large part by our entire community as being critically important. The situation in Samoa really, I think, drove the point home. I mean, you imagine 60 kids dying of the disease here and the outrage that that would cause.
Along
with that, there were thousands of others in Samoa who were infected and had serious disease. They didn't die, but this is a preventable problem that could have easily been avoided. And we've just talked about Samoa. Measles has been occurring in epidemic proportions in New Zealand and many other areas of the South Pacific. It's not just Samoa. It's in all areas where vaccine rates have gone down, where they're seeing outbreaks of measles.
You mentioned Samoa and all these other Pacific islands. Are we concerned about somebody coming in with measles? Is that something that is being screened for at the airport when people come through customs? Are there any precautions in place?
Screening for diseases in the airport, that has never been shown to be effective in keeping any disease out.
Okay.
We have been concerned for quite some time about the importation of measles from any jurisdiction. As Dr. Anderson mentioned, there has been a number of outbreaks in a number of Pacific Island nations, not just Tonga, Fiji, Samoa. We're also talking about the Philippines, Japan, the Ukraine, Israel, you know, the outbreak that occurred in New York State and New Jersey, that was directly related to importations from Israel. I'd like to also point out that four European countries, including the United Kingdom, lost their measles elimination status last year. The U.S. came very, very close to losing our measles elimination status. If we'd seen ongoing outbreak activity associated with that New York State, New York City outbreaks, even one more month, we would have lost our elimination status. That's how serious this is getting.
Wow. As you talk, it reminds me of the early Hawaiians. Many of them were killed by people coming in with measles, the white man coming in with measles.
King Kamehameha II and his consort succumbed to measles on their visit to England, and that was sort of the start of it.
Thousands of Native Hawaiians died from measles. Historically, it was one of the major causes of the decline of the Hawaiian people, and I think it was one of the reasons why Hawaii was the first state in the country to establish a board of health to deal with infectious diseases. Measles, or other diseases, were rampant for decades in Hawaii and were devastating to the Hawaiian population.
A question about the medical exemption. In order to get a medical exemption, who has to sign such an exemption? Does it have to be a medical doctor? Does it have to be someone from the state?
It has to be a healthcare provider. A physician can be a nurse practitioner. It does need to be someone who is a healthcare provider who can certify that the condition puts them at risk for getting a specific vaccine. The criteria that would preclude them from getting a vaccine vary from vaccine to vaccine. For MMR, which is a live virus vaccine, there are issues associated with that from immune-compromised individuals. Dr. Anderson mentioned pregnant women. In that case, the concern is a precaution against the rubella component in the MMR. Being pregnant is not a precaution against getting other vaccines, and in fact, Tdap, the tetanus, diphtheria, acellular pertussis vaccine is highly recommended for pregnant women to receive prior to delivery to protect their newborn child against potentially a deadly disease called whooping cough or pertussis. It depends on the vaccine, depends on the disease, and this is exactly why it requires a healthcare provider who's knowledgeable and who understands the risks associated with each and every disease and the reasons for protection and to be the one to certify whether someone can qualify for medical exemption.
Dr. Locatelli.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about the new HAR 157. You've added many worthwhile vaccines, but I believe the language in medical exemptions still says any practitioner, physician in any of the 50 states or its territories in active practice can write a medical exemption letter. Is that correct?
That's something my staff and I have actually discussed looking at more closely. If anything, we've developed updated medical exemption forms to make sure that clinical providers are aware which conditions are qualifying conditions for medical exemption for each specific vaccine.
Dr. Park, does that mean that only practitioners in the state of Hawaii can write medical exemption letters for citizens and students in Hawaii?
I'd have to look at it, to be honest, but my understanding has always been that you need to be registered or licensed in the state of Hawaii.
Dr. Park, you're wrong. If you read HAR 157, both the old one and the new one, it's any licensed physician, at least, and PA, naturopath, or nurse practitioner licensed in any of the 50 states or its territories. And I think that's horrific. You know, you can't possibly monitor validity for the million or more people out of Hawaii could write such letters.
But they can't just write any letter. They have to file in the state of Hawaii using our Hawaii form.
But Dr. Park, could you even scrutinize those? Can you review them? Can you obtain additional medical records to justify such exemption? Can you actually have any control over a practitioner out of state?
Somewhat reassuring, I hope, to you and to us, we've actually reviewed the medical exemption rates as well as the religious exemption rates. And at this point, the medical exemption rates remain very low and stable. Honestly, from our perspective, we'd want to actually scrutinize the medical exemption rates and continue to do that, because if we start to see a rise, to us that potentially suggests there may be a medical issue in our population that we need to scrutinize closer. Why would we have a rise in persons that require a medical exemption? Because that would suggest a medical condition that is occurring among our population that we need to take a closer look at. So that's the different scenario than religious exemption. Now, if we ever get into the point where the state of California, for example, where they have done away with religious exemption and there is no other avenue, shall we say, for anti-vaxxers and such to get an exemption, Certainly. I think at that point we would want to look at how we might ensure that our medical exemption is being used appropriately. But as I said, my staff and I had already been discussing how to improve that to ensure that what we're looking at is true medical exemptions. And part of that improvement was updating the medical exemption forms that are required to be used for filing medical exemptions.
Dr. Park, again, could I just ask you, is that form state specifically that the Department of Health has the ability to scrutinize and deny a medical exemption if it does not feel that medical exemption is valid?
I'd have to look at the exact wording. I'm sure you're probably looking at it. But I can tell you that my staff do look at those. And fortunately, again, we don't see many medical exemptions being requested.
In fairness, let me jump in on this. Fortunately, I think our medical providers here have been very responsible generally. We have looked at the trends in medical exemptions and religious exemptions. And basically, the number of medical exemptions seems to be very stable over the years. We're not seeing what we see in other states. As Dr. Park mentioned, you know, they're increasing because there aren't other options. I expect that if we were to eliminate the religious exemptions, more people would be going to physicians to ask for medical exemptions. So we're going to need to deal with this if that happens. Getting back to it, in other states, the problem has actually been with the religious exemptions. That's where we're seeing an increase in the number of exemptions nationally, and probably largely due to the anti-vax movement. Medical exemptions seem to be stable in most places where they haven't changed the exemption category. So I think this is something we're going to have to look at very closely. We simply don't have time to validate all the medical exemptions, and fortunately, there are not that many of them.
The fortunate thing I will comment is the form requires the name of the practitioner who's certifying it, so we can collect that data and start to scrutinize if we see an aberration in that we see someone, one particular name, continuing to pop up. That would be one way to determine that there may be a problem.
But would you then deny the medical exemption?
We'd have to look at each case-by-case scenario, yeah.
What I'm getting at is that California went through this when they changed and got rid of religious objections. They saw a tripling or quadrupling in the medical exemption. I don't want to see that happen here. I think we need to address this issue prior to anything else, and especially if the language is any practitioner in the 50 states or its territories is still in there, that should be changed immediately. Can that be something that DOH can do, or does that require legislative approval?
That does require legislative support, but it is definitely one of the many things that we're going to be looking at as we continue to move forward. It's an ongoing struggle. I think we're all on the same side on this. We'd like to see higher vaccination rates. We'd like to protect our community. Hopefully, we can address each one of these issues. And as Dr. Anderson mentioned, our bigger concern right now, though, is the religious exemption.
I have to also say, we deal with the legislators a lot, and our current committee chair is there at the legislature. I think valued vaccinations as we do, and I feel very strongly that we need to maintain our high vaccination rates, and they will go to the mat to make that happen. I believe if we do find this to be a problem going forward, that is, people are abusing the medical exemptions or the religious exemption category, that will be revisited, and we will be able to get support for making those changes. We would ask for them if we find a problem to be occurring in those areas.
Dr. Locatelli, I would ask, if you see any other issues, we would be more than welcome to your input and be grateful for that input.
I do want to mention that I know in October in California, they started cracking down on physicians who were granting medical exemptions that the California Department of Health determined were inappropriate, either too many of them, as you say, Dr. Park, same name popping up, or just not actual medical exemptions. So it's pretty clear that the concern, Dr. Locatelli, that you have is a valid one, and that other states have seen it and are beginning to deal with it, which I'm guessing, Dr. Park and Dr. Anderson, it sounds like you're going to deal with it as well.
Right. We've been watching what's been going on in California very closely.
And I do appreciate the feedback that we're getting here. This is a challenge in all states, and everyone's trying to adapt their programs to prevent abuse and to assure that their communities are vaccinated. We have a moving target here. We're doing our best to make changes. And I have to emphasize, I think Hawaii can be very proud of the vaccination program that's available to them today. We're probably one of the leaders, and we are one of the leaders, if not the leader in the country, on requiring vaccination, which is appropriate. We're in the crossroads of the Pacific. We've got more visitors coming here than most places. We're more susceptible to these diseases. And, of course, needless to say, we value our youth and health as primary importance to all of us here. I'm hopeful we can address these issues if they come up effectively, and I know we've got support over the legislature should we need to change the laws.
That's good news if we actually do have support at the legislature. It's good that you can help advise them. Before we say aloha, is there anything you'd like to add, Dr. Peter Locatelli?
No, I'm looking forward to the future on this with trepidation, though, with adding new vaccines, but in fact, seemingly to make it easier to get exemptions for that vaccines.
Okay. And Dr. Sarah Park, what would you like to say in closing?
It's never too late to be vaccinated.
Okay. Good advice. And Dr. Bruce Anderson, how about you before we say aloha?
I'm over 57, and if I were, I certainly would have been vaccinated. I want to thank you, Sherry, for allowing us to share some of the information we have today on the importance of vaccination. I can't think of a single public health measure that's more important in protecting our community, and I think there's an important topic, and I'm sure we'll have future discussions on this matter. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Peter Locatelli, Dr. Bruce Anderson, Dr. Sarah Park. Aloha.
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 Thank you so much to our listeners for being here. I'm Sherry Brack, and this is Island Conversations. Remember, the podcast for Island Conversations for anytime listening are available at kwxx.com or b97hawaii.com or wherever you get podcasts. I'll see you next time for another Island Conversations. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoiho.
Thank you for listening to Island Conversations with Sherry Bracken, available anytime at kwxx.com. We welcome your feedback and suggestions at info@kwxx.com. Join us next week for another Island Conversations with Sherry Bracken, brought to you by KTA Superstores, where you're someone special every day since 1916.